Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
What's up, ladies and gents? Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast. And today we're going to host Pedram Shoja, the author of The Urban Monk. And you guys know I've evolved beyond the muscle building because I realized the necessity of learning so much more than just the X's and O's inside the gym. What we do in the gym is very important, but what we do outside of the gym is so much more vital in us living our greatest life and being truly happy. And Pedram is honestly a man to inspire to be more like. I left this podcast being absolutely inspired to be a greater human being. A lot of the answers he gave me to the questions I asked were well outside of what you would expect. Some of the things you can expect to learn in this podcast is self-mastery is about finding your inner voice. I think that's really, really interesting. Finding what's behind the chatter in your mind and being present and doing only one thing and doing it really, really well. And this is so important in the gym. This is important with your kids. This is important in your work. Learning how to eliminate distraction is something Pedram and I talk about a lot, and turning awareness around and shining the light on yourself. Well, what does that look like? Stop looking outside of yourself to try to find the answers and realize the answers are within you. And that starts with meditation, mindfulness, and awareness. And if you want to do something in life, take the first step. And I love that. Take one step. That's massive. And so many people are afraid. And he goes into some really cool details about how to do that and how he does it with both his life, his kids, and how he's become so successful incorporating this mindfulness practice into this successful business he runs as an entrepreneur and CEO. You guys are going to love this episode. Listen right to the end. And as always, if you love it, share it with someone who needs to hear it. Enjoy the episode. Hey guys, I interrupt this podcast to bring you a special announcement from me and the MI40 Nation. So for the last year, I've been working on something that's going to change the fitness industry. So everyone that's listening to this podcast exercises, everybody works out. But typically we learn from the people on YouTube, the people who we most admire and most want to be like. And that's a massive mistake that's limiting your progress, limiting your ability to build muscle. What you need to do is you need to learn how to train for your body type. And I've just released something called Hypertrophy Execution Mastery. So basically, I'm going to give you everything I've learned over the last 20 years to optimize execution for your body and some simple concepts that you can take away and apply to every single exercise you do to not only make it fit your body, but make it maximally effective for your body. Because we don't want to just be training. We want to be getting the most out of our training. I attach to getting the most out of the least. I don't want to be in the gym for 2 hours anymore. I want to be in there for 40 minutes. I want to crush it. I want to go home with the maximum amount of results and maximum amount of response and an S on my chest, knowing that I got the job done that I set out to achieve. So if you guys want to check this out, it's going to revolutionize the way you work out. Hypertrophymastery.com. You're going to absolutely love it. And I appreciate your support. Enjoy the rest of the podcast. I think before we can start getting into the mechanics of like how to do this stuff, you know, you don't know what you don't know. And most people have no idea that there is noise. Most people are intentionally blocking out their mind, right? They're doing everything they possibly can to numb their mind. And they don't even realize what type of benefit they could possibly be seeing on the other end. You know, like what are some of the benefits that people may see from, you know, just introducing some type of, you know, consistent, regular mindfulness practice?
Well, I mean, most people also don't realize that 80% of their decisions are made under duress. And, you know, most of their life is spent, you know, running towards something or away from something, right? And it's freaking exhausting. Everyone's talking about how tired they are and how stressed they are. The walls are caving in, and those are self-inflicted wounds, right? And so that's really where the rubber hits the road, is realizing that every problem you have in life is really generated and reinforced by your own mind. So you want to, you know, look for solutions. They're not outside of you, right? They're always the internal locus of control is you. And once you kind of recognize that and step into that, then you are in the game, right? And then you can do something about it.
you know, I love what you said there. And this is, I think, what I say to everybody as far as starting to change your life is the internal locus of control, extreme ownership for everything. And this is something that I've really started to come into, you know, in the last five or so years, you know, owning every aspect of my life. Do you have some strategies that you implemented to, you know, immediately start changing your mind from, you know, external, everything being outside of me, to start taking ownership?
Yeah, it starts with rituals every day, right? And so my first ritual, starting my day, you know, rain or shine, you know, young kids and, you know, all the chaos that comes with having kids and stuff, never let this one go. Yeah. And it's, I have a particular Qigong set that I do every morning before my day even starts. And so, you know, the first thing you're going to do, your autonomic deal before you even get your day going is, you know, you're going to get up and you're going to go pee, right? And so for me, before I even allow myself to run to the bathroom, I have like a five exercise set that I have to do. Watching my hands, eyes, mind, body, and breath, focused in on what I'm doing, consolidating, gathering chi, and becoming mindful in this practice. And then, yeah, you go off and pee and do your thing or sit down and meditate if you got time. But it reorients your day towards internal focus before your autonomic thing starts, like before you run down and hit the, you know, button on the coffee machine, before, you know, pick up the phone and start looking at your text or your Facebook feed if you're really lost, right? And you know, you fall down this whitewater of life, and you never even like learn to check in first. So for me, it's about setting that up. It's around setting that up around meals, because they happen all the time and they're regular. And so you set rituals around things that you're doing on a daily basis that force mindfulness and just kind of hijack your day and be like, yo, dummy, think about this for a second. And I found that that's been very helpful, right? Like, I mean, look, I was a monk for years and, you know, sat on rocks and did all the work. And so, you know, I've sweat those, you know, I've sweat those hours. But most people who live normal lives, if you will, here in town, man, they're like, look, I don't have time to do all that crap. So therefore, I'm going to take a pill, or I'm going to, you know, just, you know, think I'm biohacking and you know, shortcut my way around some of this. There's no shortcut around the introspective work. There's no shortcut around stopping time to check in with yourself. You just got to build, you know, kind of regular rituals in your day to be able to do it, or else you're lost. You're tumbling down the whitewater.
Can you talk about, you know, kind of the mechanics of Qigong, and so people can start to conceptualize what type of tangible thing is actually happening and what type of tangible benefits they may experience? Sure. Because I think in order for people to actually want to change, they need to understand a little bit about the
why. Yeah, so I mean, it's the integration of eyes, mind, body, and breath. And so when, you know, I was the Qigong guy and the meditation guy, you know, before I came back and started my medical clinics. And, you know, I basically hired brain scientists and started a brain lab and went like, look, I know this stuff is awesome. Map these brains and tell me what the hell's happening. And so you could see the sensory motor strip just light up on people as they're doing Qigong. You could see left-right integration. You can see the body's proprioception start to recalibrate and balance. And it's an amazing feat to be able to gather all your senses with something. And again, if I'm talking about eyes, mind, body, and breath, I'm watching what I'm doing as I'm doing it. I'm focused on my breath. I'm focused on my posture. I'm focused on my alignment. I'm focused on keeping my... I'm focused on so many damn things that I can't focus on anything else. And that's the whole thing. It's about grabbing the attention, the entirety of your attention, and bringing it into this moment and allowing you to be present here now and doing only what you're doing and doing it well. If your eyes move over there, if you start thinking about, you know, the call you didn't make, you're not doing the Qigong anymore. So it's like a real life biofeedback practice that's been practiced for thousands of years and has a hell of a lot more, you know, validity and history than, you know, a lot of these things that people just make up in the shower and like start their new techniques. So, you know, I'm a big fan of the ancient stuff, right? Because a lot of people are just out there BSing, trying to come up with new stuff to slap their name on it and make money. And, you know, that ain't real.
I love it, man. And is, you know, just before we even move on, is there somewhere people can go to find, you know, a 5-minute intro to Qigong that you're teaching? Because I'll tell you what, I'd love to do it, and I wouldn't even know where to start, right? And I would, you know, kind of want the baby steps.
I mean, I get a ton of them for free on theurbanmonk.com. Yeah. I have this thing called the 7-day reboot. It's been up for years. It's like, you know, just a lot of practices, meditation downloads. You know, I just you know, share a lot of stuff out there with the world. And, you know, the sad part is, you know, you could share it, you could lead a horse to water, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, you could even do it once and be like, oh, that was cool, and then move on with your life. It's not going to work for you that way, right? Like, it's just, you got to do it. And when you do it, all of a sudden you're like, wow, everything's working better. My life is better. The friction's gone. So, you know, I could dangle it all out there in the universe. And, you know, the serious people who do it are the ones whose lives change.
So one of the things you mentioned there that I want to touch on is, and you said you've been a monk, and I think that's not something you can pass over, because so many people say, I'm not willing to do that. I don't have the time. I don't have the desire. So maybe therefore that may be a deterrent from them even starting Qigong and meditation. I'd love for you to kind of start diving into, you know, the necessity of starting a meditation practice for someone, and how much benefit could they expect to see from a small amount of change, right? Do they have to become a monk to actually get to your level or get to any level,
sure,
right?
So this was really kind of one of the fundamental breakdowns and mistranslations of this stuff as it came over to the West. And so, you know, I'm up in the Himalayas doing this thing, and you know, I was an ascetic monk. You know, I'd shave my head and, you know, back when it was a choice. And you know, was, you know, doing that work. And it occurred to me that there was a fundamental misunderstanding of yoga, meditation, and all these practices when they translated over to the West, because as an ascetic, I had relinquished the world in that way, right? Like, I'm doing this thing. This is what I do. I have hours a day dedicated. You know, there's chores. There's a lot of work, but like, this is who I am and this is what I do. Whereas if you look at the majority of people in Asia who still in India who do these types of practices, they're householders, right? And so these are people who have agreed to be, you know, family men and family women who are in the world doing whatever the heck that they're doing, but having the right dharma, you know, just being part of a community, being a righteous member of the community, practicing right livelihood, and also having their personal practice that they did, you know, in the morning before the kids wake up and here and there to supplement their day and keep their operating system, you know, working. And so, you know, the Beatles go off, bring the Maharishi, all sorts of stuff comes over, and you know, we're so extreme in the West that we're like, oh, listen, for me to have a meditation practice, I have to experience nirvana or like hang upside down in a Lakotan ritual or take ayahuasca, you know, at, you know, a Burning Man. And that's, you know, it's all this extreme crap where it's like, yo, if you just learn to breathe for 5-10 minutes a day and we're a better person at work, what would that do, right? How can you be a better householder, and how can you integrate these practices into the life you're living now instead of running for the hills? And so that's, you know, that's when I came down off the mountain and I was like, look, this is, you know, this is a fundamental misread of how any of this is supposed to go. And everyone I know in the West is like feeling guilty about not getting to yoga for 90 minutes today when, you know, they got too much other shit to do, right? And so it's just, you know, everyone's stressed out about these practices, and so therefore they just don't do them because it's too much. And I think that that's really where the world has taken a wrong turn.
It's kind of the paradox, right? Is you know, they get it, that's kind of the irony. I said that last week as I was speeding to get to yoga class. kind of the irony of it, right? Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about your decision to be a monk, because obviously I've read your book. I know a little bit about where that came from, but I think that's so fascinating. And what did you see in yourself, or what lack did you see in the world that inspired you to, if that's even the right question, that inspired you to go there?
So I was pre-med at UCLA, and I, you know, bought into the script, right? Like, you do this, and then you follow this track, and then you're successful, and you help people, and, you know, whatever, white picket fence. And so, you know, then I start to really see the underbelly of the beast. You know, I'm watching, you know, the patients getting dripped on morphine, and there's no solutions for them. And, you know, I really start to lose faith in what it was I was doing. And, you know, as the guy who I was shadowing was a miserable human being. And this is the guy I'm looking down the barrel of living his life. And I was just like, wow, this is, I'm lost. I'm confused. This sucks. Like, I don't want this. And so at the same time, I'd started a Tai Chi practice. You know, some Japanese guy showed up at UCLA and was teaching, and you could feel the life, you could feel the energy coursing through your veins. And you're like, wow. And you know, I'm a martial artist. So all of a sudden I'm like, I'm hitting harder and I'm jumping higher. And I'm like, wow, this stuff is really like, impacting my performance. I feel better. I look better. I mean, all of it, right? And so on one side, there's all this life and vitality. On the other side, it's like death and mortality. And I go, God, you know, I no longer want this path. And, you know, it's kind of a crazy story. But, you know, I was obviously, you know, when you are on a track and then you fall off of it, there's a time of kind of tumultuous thinking that comes. And so I was kind of stumbling around the UCLA library, having conversation with God, being like, yo, like, you know, what now? What do I do? You know, I really need guidance. And a book fell out of a bookshelf about 15, 20 feet in front of me. And I'm like, come on.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, wow. You know, and you're like, you start laughing, right? And I like look through the rack, like as if one of my friends had like done it and was messing with me, as if they could hear my thoughts, right? And I'm like, it's just me. And so it was open to a passage of a Taoist master leading his disciples across this raging river during a flood by connecting their lower Dantian energy and towing them with this energetic thing. I'm like, come on, what is this? And, but because books normally don't fall out of bookshelves, I was like, you know what I mean? I was like, I should probably read this.
Yeah, I'm going to take
this. Yeah. So I read the book that night. It was called The Wandering Taoist. And the next day, I actually found a Taoist Kung Fu school not too far and, you know, dragged a buddy of mine down with me. And as I walk into the waiting room, the master comes across the whole studio, points straight at me, not at my buddy, and goes, oh, you're here. I've been waiting for you. I was like, I guess I am, right? And so next thing I know, you know, he turned out to be the senior student of one of the most illustrious masters that escaped from China. And I just got pulled into lineage and, you know, like grown up wanting to be a Jedi. This actually like was that path, right? I was just all of a sudden we're doing all sorts of crazy cool things. You know, I'm able to swing from vines and, you know, flip around and do all sorts of like, you know, cool things that made me better. And the deal was, you don't leave your school, you don't mess around. I was taking 24 units at UCLA, getting straight A's. And like, you know, it was just about being better because Kung Fu means hard work. And, you know, I bit into the operating system. And, you know, next thing I know, they're like, listen, I really want you to consider becoming a monk of the lineage. You've got what it takes. And they just, I didn't even really have much time to think about it. I said yes before I even knew what I was doing. And I was in.
So tell me a little bit about, if you don't mind me prying into your personal business, when he pointed at you and said, you know, you're the one, did he have an explanation for that or where did that go?
No, I was just like, who is this guy? Right? Like you just get...
Yeah, with first the book and then the guy going, you know, I know you.
Well, that's it. I mean, the auspices under which I got there was me asking God for help. And then at that point, it's like the revelation, right? You just get out of the way and just kind of follow those breadcrumbs. And so, you know, of course he said that, right, is really, you know, the way that would roll. So I was just like, all right, you know, I'm on this magical, you know, carpet ride now. And so where's this going to go? And so as all these things kind of unfolded and he's like, be a monk, it was like, okay, well, you asked for guidance and this feels right. Just get the heck out of the way. And so, I did, right? You just get out of the way and then, you know, an amazing life shows up for you.
So many people in the Western world are kind of striving for this this divine enlightenment. Is that what you went into monkhood seeking? And do you think that's a reasonable quest for people in the Western world?
I think that's one of the biggest traps, period. Is, you know, everyone thinks that sex is about the orgasm, right? Everyone thinks that success is about the yacht. Right. It's the West is completely lost in that. And it's all this experience of some sort of like nirvana bliss, you know, that you might as well just take LSD for. Right. Like it is an absolute trap to even consider enlightenment and all these types of things as part of it. For me, it's about bettering yourself, facing your demons, becoming a better version of you, upgrading your operating system and finding peace by understanding how your mind works. And in these interstitial moments, it's like, whoa, you have these flashes of brilliance. You say things that, you know, kind of sound inspired and you start growing there. But for people to kind of say like, okay, you know, I want to, you know, I have all these, you know, jackasses in Malibu that are talking about how enlightened they are, right? Or these people that go do ayahuasca and talk about how evolved they are over other people. That's all ego. Right. And I think the West has been infected by this. And there's just this egomaniacal tendency to need to be better than people, to need to belong, to need the like the POW experience, like the big O of enlightenment. And I think that has really done a disservice to people in this space. And I think a lot of the meditation teachers and Qigong teachers, you know, these guys are trying to make a living. And so they fall into the trap of delivering the sugar cereal to the kids, right? And so that's not necessarily what these people need, but these guys who are like, you know, I want to be famous, you know, they step in and become the guru, and then they're out of integrity, right? Because now they're no longer teaching the real stuff.
So with that said, there's millions of people in North America right now seeking something, seeking some attempt at improving their life, improving their ability to become mindful, improving their ability to become greater versions of themselves. What's the first step?
First step is to take some time and understand how your breath works and just get under your breath. Just anchor into something that's real. Your breath is real. You stop doing it, you're dead, right? And so just learning to calm the mind and silence the mind and just develop a culture of slowing down and checking in with yourself is the first step. Because again, you know, here I go as a guy who's written a book, right? Everyone thinks that, you know, I've written three books, but everyone thinks that the answer is in the next book that they haven't read yet, right? And so the books, all they're supposed to do is point back at you and be like, look within. Right. So here's the 6-step system to enlightenment. Here's my 4 steps to, like, you know, better muscle and less fat. Okay. There's all this tabloid crap. Right. And so the
your
first
book should come with a mirror. Right.
That's it, man. That's it. So the first stop on that journey is always turning the light of awareness around and looking within.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that orientation, you're what the Buddhists call a hungry ghost. Right. You're always looking for answers outside yourself. And so the problem with the industry, the way that the parasitic energy of the industry is set up, is to extract money, attention, and value out of customers. And so it's always about, like, oh, I've got this thing, you know, oh, what you don't know is the Pedram method. Like, you know, that's the thing. Like, you know, screw yoga. I got yoga 2.0. Like, I got the answer. And that's all just nonsense, right? The answer mm-hmm. lies within you. A good teacher teaches you how to find that and stay in that inquiry, and that's where the real game is.
It's painful. You know, for a lot of people, we spend so much time becoming, you know, years becoming mindless. The idea of turning around and becoming mindful, you know, I experience on a day-to-day basis how many people around me just won't even sit in silence for 5 minutes. Is that where it starts? Is just literally like, be by yourself and breathe?
Well, yeah, and I mean, so we've been taught to avert the pain. Right. Whether it's through, you know, aspirin commercials, or whether it's through, you know, this advertising industry that's always drawing us out of ourselves to, like, you know, extract value out of us, to be like, you're not good enough. You're not attractive enough. You know, chicks like guys with hair. This is how you grow your hair back. You know what I mean? Like, all of it. Right. Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you get to the point where you are not even in control of your own decisions, right? And so that's where it is. It's like, you know, and this is the one thing the Scientologists, I think, say right, is like, you know, it is all about mind control and we're just being puppeteered, right? And then they go off into some crazy culty direction. But, sure. You know, it's the world is about entrapping the consciousness of people and extracting life force out of them. That's how a lot of this industry is. And so you want to be free. You have to wake up to the fact that, like, pain isn't something to be averted. You breathe into the pain. You look at the pain. You grow through the pain. You use that as the fertilizer to grow yourself as a person. You use that as the lead, right? In alchemy, we talk about transmuting lead into gold. That's the lead that's transmuted into gold. So everyone's trying to look for the gold, not realizing that the substrate is that pain. That's where the work is. That's what you have to go through. And in that process, you wake up to yourself and you become more whole. You become more compassionate, because if I'm okay with my pain, then I don't see or sense the pain in you and either judge you or run away from you, because I understand that I also have pain. I can feel for you, right? And so a lot of the orientation around aversion to pain is where I think people have gotten lost in our culture. And again, I just think the messaging is all wrong, because people are just trying to, you know, get famous and be a guru or whatever. And they're not allowing people to understand that the work's like, okay, so you're talking about like muscle fitness and stuff. When the hell was a burpee fun, right? It's just, right. It's good for you, right?
Right.
You do the work because it's good for you. On the other side, the results are there. But I mean, I don't know anyone who enjoys doing a burpee. right? It's just, it sucks. Right. And so that's life, absolutely. Right? It's, you know, Kung Fu means hard work or eat bitter. And so once you understand that life is hard work, you just work through your pain, you work through your stuff, then on the other side, you're a whole human being and you're well-rounded.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think one of the most important things you said in there is people are so attached to what it's going to look like when it's done. And I think that's the disconnect that exists now with media and social media is like we have to achieve some end result rather than just acknowledging that the joy is in the process and becoming that great person is so valuable. So obviously going and becoming a monk was probably the hard, I'm speculating, probably the hardest thing you've ever done, leaving your life to enter this new life. Can you talk about some of the biggest learning opportunities or the biggest takeaways you had from your time there as a monk?
I think a lot of it during the monk days, and I would actually argue that I think becoming a dad after being a monk was the hardest thing I've ever done, because being a monk, your orientation is very self-centered, right? You're working on yourself, And then all of a sudden you have to flip the script and realize that you're like, you know, third or fourth in line.
You don't even matter.
Yeah, I just scooped the dog poop, right? And so like it just shifts everything where you're like, damn, all right, well, you know, I guess I'll just breathe while I'm walking the dogs, right? But, you know, I was guilty as charged like anyone else when I became a monk. You know, it's like, oh, show me this next kung fu form. You know, I need, you know, I learned the tiger form. Now I need the snow tiger form. I need the leopard. It's like this consumer of like spiritual information or like, you know, this qigong level. I can't wait to get to the next level because at that level.
The shopping cart of spiritual information.
Oh, that's it, man. Once I'm a 33rd degree Mason, then I could, you know, be the emperor of the world. You know, it's just this crap, right? And so it took a while. You know, I was my 20s, right? It took a while to just understand that the consumption of more information wasn't necessarily the way. It took a while to realize what the heck these people, they were forthcoming and honest the whole time, but I'm an idiot, right? Like that's the problem. It's like you start to finally get it through your thick skull and then you sit on your butt and you work on yourself, right? And then as you do so, that's when all of a sudden the teacher shows up and gives you the advanced form anyways, because he's like, great, now you're not an asshole. Right, like okay, now you can learn.
I think the hardest thing to do is forget everything you think you know, right? And that's what I say when everybody walks into my gym and I'm like, hey, forget everything you think you know about exercise, or we're going to teach you what actually is the reality. And I'm sure it's a similar situation for you.
Oh man, like I'm in this thing now because like, you know, my baby is like two and a quarter or so. My son's like four or something. Like we're starting to get out again. And I'm like, you know, I want to get my backflip back. And so I'm in this parkour gym, you know, with all kinds of old martial arts injuries and stuff. And like my whole thing with it has been like, no, come on. So I take my camera guys with me because the camera guys are like, hey, I need people to understand that this 42-year-old dad bod getting back into like kung fu shape isn't always pretty, right? And so I'm like, don't edit any of this crap out. Like this is the parkour. This is the work, right? When you see the guy doing like a triple flip dismount and like, you know, kind of calling his shots, man, that is after so many ugly moments that no one wants to see. And like, this is the work, right? Like every single bad flip is what leads to the excellence, you know, in this person's like, what am I doing? Am I not jumping right? Am I not flicking my knees up? Was I not thinking, you know? And so that's the process. And to me, that's way more important than like the beautiful backflip, because yeah, once you've gotten there, you've already learned that lesson, right? Then it's time to kind of, you know, go further.
There's so much beauty in what you just said there. And I think the thing that people refuse to acknowledge is it's the fear in themselves that they won't succeed, right? They won't subject themselves to, like, I wouldn't put myself trying to do a backflip on a video because I don't even know that I will ever succeed, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if you believe so heartedly in yourself that no matter what happens, how many times you got to fall on your face, eventually you're going to get it. That's just that. There's a lot of character building in that in itself, right? It's like, I'm going to put myself on the line here and I'm going to do it no matter what.
Well, that's it. Look, you know, I could feel real proud of myself and be like, oh, Pedram Shojai, you know, New York Times best-selling author, the urban monk, this guy, you know, he shits flowers kind of thing, right? That's all nonsense. Right. that's all right. Nonsense. You know, Don Juan used to have Carlos Castaneda go and become like a busboy randomly in some random restaurant and take orders from like people because he was like, stop taking yourself so seriously. You're nobody. Right. And that's it. It's like every day you just got to start over and be like, you know, I'm nobody and I'm here to learn. And I, you know, you just got to kind of show up and be humble because that's when you start learning. That's when you get better. Right. And so for me, I've had my teeth kicked in over that in the martial arts over these years. It's just like anytime like you lack humility, like you're getting demonstrated on and like somehow you're the guy taking the punches in front of the class. And it's just kind of built into my operating system now where you're just like, man, you know, it's like as soon as I think I'm cool, that's when the punch is coming.
Pedro, there's so much to be learned in that. And I think that's hard for people is to realize that you are the student. And how do people start becoming more aware of their ego and then overcoming their ego? And I guess the third question to that is, what if people don't want to change their ego? Mm-hmm. Like, is there a way to overcome these things? And become aware of it, I guess. But what do you have any recommendations?
I think that's also another misread. I mean, we could be here for days. But I also think that, you know, this Buddhist notion of ego and, you know, being egoless also doesn't right. really interface with kind of Western Judeo-Christian culture because sure. we are kind of an ego-driven culture. And that's also like our, you know, there's the, you know, the old world is interdependent, new world is independent, right? And so there's all sorts of like differences between, you know, Occident and Orient type of thing. And I think that having a healthy ego, like having a storefront that allows you to like be excellent and kind of use that to kind of progress and excel in life is healthy. And so I actually believe in having a healthy ego and an ability to kind of refine your ego into kind of, you know, just kind of shaving off the rough edges so that you can interface with people better and you can have a storefront that makes you kind of an easier person to engage with, a better person to deal with. You know, like as a dad, you don't want to be the big dog. You want to, you know, you want to be compassionate and all sorts of things. So, you know, I think working on the ego is also like, you know, a sculptor's job that comes with, you know, facing your humility, working on your strengths and really facing your weaknesses in a way that just helps you evolve as a person. And so, I mean, it's a big conversation, but you know, again, it's another one of these weird kind of misreads of Eastern culture that I think has permeated like this yogic thinking. Like, I don't know an egoless person. I've never met one. And I've met the Dalai Lama. I've studied with them. You know, like everyone still needs an ego to just be able to like walk through the street.
Sure. One of the terms that I heard you use at one point was conscious capitalism, and you obviously still own a very successful business, well.org. How do you start integrating, or how did you begin integrating the idea of living in this capitalist society with the mindfulness, love-centered attitude that you exude?
So the pain on reentry, right, of being an ascetic monk and then, you know, being told and kind of deciding to join the world again, you know, puts you square in the crosshairs of that, you know, of that deal where it's just like, wow, okay, yeah. Like, so now I have to generate money and pay for things. And, you know, so I have a big business and it costs a lot of money. And so you're constantly looking at how to generate money. And then at first it's like, oh my God, these people, like the competitors, there's so many people out there that are ruthless. Just crap. Yeah. Lying and like, you know, smoking cigarettes behind the scenes and like, you know, just they're in the health industry, it just alone. I mean, and these personal development people, I mean, there's just charlatans everywhere. So you start to see the devil around every turn. And you're like, oh my God, like this is, it's permeated everything. And so I really started looking at Right Livelihood. I, you know, my last film was on conscious capitalism. Just being like, who's doing this right? Who is ethically making the world better with everything they do? Every footstep grows flowers behind them. And, you know, that is the way of the future if we're going to survive. And so I've spent a lot of time doing that. You know, I spent a lot of time looking at the footprint, everything we do. We look at the wake of our actions at well.org. And it's, you know, it's not always easy, you know, like I'm burning some sort of energy now, but I'm offsetting it with like carbon credits. Like it's, you know, you live in the world, you have a wake. But then the question becomes, how can you just better that every day? How can you make what you do drive more meaning and purpose and really kind of align with, you know, who you are inside? Because a lot of people will, you know, do what they do at work and then give it church, you know? And so there's always this kind of like, you know, it's always like the mob boss who's asking for, you know, forgiveness in the confessionals on Sunday after whacking people all week, right? And that right. model is no longer going to work either. There's none of this like, you know, clearing karma afterwards that we can afford. So, you know, I just, It's a tough one, right? Because the good people of the world repel money. And so, you know, a lot of the sociopaths are like, great, we'll take it. And they control the politics. They control, you know, a lot of the economy. And we have the world that we have, right? And so, I'm also a big advocate of saying the good people of the world need to step in and own money in a righteous way and use it to make the world the place that we choose to live in versus, you know, being reactive, being like, oh my God, you know, everything's out of my hands. And, you know, I do my yoga over here, but the world's falling apart. That's not a righteous, you know, that's not how a warrior lives. And you know what? If you got something like, you know, a family, you got something that's worth fighting for, then you got to draw your sword and be like, where do I take a stand and where do I stand for my values and my family and my loved ones and that tree outside, right? Like I, you know, these are things that I want to defend. So what do I need to do so? It's a big question, but I think it's the important question we all have to ask ourselves.
As an evolved man and a business owner, do you have any fear or do you still have fear about remaining competitive in a cutthroat world? Like it's I think a lot of people have this fear, you know, even myself at some points, like this fear about like, hey, I want to be a successful businessman because I want to create wealth so that I can give back. But then you're dealing with these people, like you say, who are, you know, in the fitness industry, smoking cigarettes behind the scenes. How do you overcome that fear? And is there a fear for you? And if so, how do you overcome it?
Yeah, I think the kind of 1.0 version of this consciousness that I think we're kind of growing out of is this myth of scarcity, right? Where, you know, everyone's fighting over a slice of pie and the pie is a finite thing. And there's only this many people that you know, are customers and, you know, they're getting market share and all this kind of stuff. And you know what? I've always believed in delivering value and making the pie bigger and really stacking value for everyone involved. And so, you know, if you go to that fear, it becomes a race to the bottom. And if you just kind of lay yourself on the sacrificial altar of service and be like, listen, I'm going to do the best work I can. I'm going to help people at every turn and I'm going to be raw and authentic and I'm just going to do great work. People see that, man. People see the nonsense. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a lot of people that get kind of stuck on the flypaper, but eventually they see it. People could smell BS. And so, you know, these methods are starting to go away as people are waking up to them. And so really, I think the economy of the future is just going to be raw, authentic people that are about win-wins. They're going to continue to inspire people to grow. And, you know, look, you know, the thing that I helped someone with, you know, I know a lot of people that kind of like, you know, they found some watering hole, they've been fishing at it for like 20 years and they're just bored, right? And so it's like, okay, that's great. You're making money over there. But like, what have you done lately? You know, so I inspire all my friends. It's like, hey, you know, like I love that film you made 6 years ago. What's next, homie? You know, like the mm-hmm. conversation has moved forward. Like what I did a few years ago is not even that relevant anymore because the world has moved. And so, you know, as long as I continue to grow, my business will continue to grow, my message will continue to grow, and I don't have to worry about it because I'm kind of evolving with the universe. It's like this fractal that's just opening and you're riding that wave versus, you know, kind of fighting against change. So I think letting go of that and trusting, kind of like what I did with the book and, you know, the guy that was like, you've shown up. That's the ride, right? And that's where the magic really lives. And I don't mean that even in an airy-fairy way. Like, you know, ask anyone whose life has kind of like just blossomed. There's just this je ne sais quoi about it where you just kind of like, you feel it. It feels right. You go with it. You keep doing the right thing. And, you know, good things happen.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, as someone who's very evolved, you've gone through a lot of evolution in your life and people don't always seem to come along with you. Do you have any recommendation for people who are living this evolved life, you know, doing their best to live their greatest life and maybe the people around them aren't really on the same path?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess I would start by saying, I don't know how evolved I am, right? Like I'm still a knuckle dragging brute, like in so many of my things, right? You just get to the point where you're like, wow, that was really dumb, idiot, right? It's like all this work that I've done, you know, I'm just human, right? And so that's really the orientation, is really understanding that, you know, evolution is something that's happening every moment. You know, I was talking to Dr. Mayo of the Mayo Clinic years ago, and I was a young doc at the time. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, with a name like yours, it must be easy. And the dude says something. He's like, you know, I'm only as good as my last surgery, Pedram, every day, right? And so I'm only as good as the last interaction I had with my Labrador, with my wife, with my kids, with a customer. And so, you know, it's a constant game that you have to stay on and continue to work on yourself. The minute you think you're evolved is the minute you start to, you know, lose that altitude and come down, right? And so again, that's the whole thing, is like just the built-in humility is, I'm not that evolved. I'm just a guy, right? And that's the operating system that keeps me on, you know, on my tracks and able to continue to help people. Because, you know, I see people messing up and I get it. Like, it's like, yeah, you know, I see how you're in your way. And so then you could come from a place of compassion and try. And some people don't want to be helped, and I get it, right? But then you're not elevated, right? Because you know, when you're putting your hand down trying to help someone, it's just a different thing. I'd rather just kind of be, I'd rather jump in the ditch and grab them and be like, hey, come on, you know, I think there's a way out over here. And again, that comes from just changing your operating system to constantly be working on yourself.
Awesome, man. One of the things that really got my attention that you said was find meaning and live an awesome life filled with purpose and adventure. And that literally like resonated with me 1,000%, because so many people are living a life of quiet desperation, you know, in routines, mindlessly going about their business. How do we start to live a life or conceptualize living a life of meaning and with purpose and adventure?
Bold steps, right? I think that, you know, a lot of us are just so shell-shocked into the algorithm of life, right? That we're like, well, we can't do this. You know, like we're looking at a new school for my kid, and we go to this like Montessori school. And like, I sat there in the parking lot for 10 minutes. My wife got there and, you know, I was like, nope, we're done. You just walked out, because the way these kids were just walking in like zombies, it was like this automaton training center for people that are just going to go work in some cubicle down the line. I'm like, not my kid, we're out of here, right? And so you look at all these places where we're on autopilot in our lives, and it's about just doing something awesome, right? Like, I mean, the example I use, I mean, like, everyone's like, what that? Like, my family thinks I'm a lunatic. They're like, why the hell is your old ass trying to do a backflip? I'm like, the better question is why not?
Why right? not? Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, it's a measure of flexibility. It's a measure of physics. It's a measure of all sorts of things. And it's just awesome. Like, mm-hmm. have you not wanted to do something cool in your life? Like, what, you know what I mean? And so it's like, you start thinking about that. It's like, oh, I've always wanted to see the pyramids. I'm like, all right, so when's the trip?
Yeah, right? Where are we going?
Yeah, yeah. Or, you know, you want to like, you talk about wanting to do the John Muir Trail. You know, that's about averaging 16 to 20 miles a day with 40 pounds on your pack. If you really want to do it, that means we better put some like water bottles in your backpack and get you on a local hike right now, doesn't it? Right. And so you just kind of like you call your shots, you get out there, you do it, and then you come back and everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. And you're like, yeah, because you're, you know, in that automaton, like zombie, like people are just like sleepwalking through life. And then you do something awesome like that, they try to pull you back down. So then you start meeting more awesome people and you're like, yo, let's go hike this thing next. Right.
Let's go do more awesome stuff.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, you're a YouTube celebrity. Or like, well, you know, you're so special. And it's just like, no, it was just a decision, right? It was just a decision to step forward in life and do something that's meaningful to me. And that's, you know, that's it. Like, you make that decision, then your feet just kind of like fall right in front of each other and you just end up following the path. You just say, okay, no, this is what I'm doing. And then the entire universe conspires to help you. It's just some weird kind of magic.
I love it, man. And I'm a dad, and you're obviously a dad. And how do you create adventure with your kids?
You know, every, like, so, you know, I take, my kids were skiing when they were one, right? Yeah. Because why not, right? My son is starting parkour now. He's, you know, he's 3 and a half. He's in parkour. And like, because he's like, oh, I want to do that. I'm like, yeah, why not, right? Let's go. Right? Why wouldn't I start your Jedi training as soon as you can walk, right? And so, you know, you go in the woods, you do stuff, you go to the park, and you're like, all right, well, you know, let's try this. And so you start to build in, because the culture is all about fear, right? Fear of death, fear of injury, fear of, you know, kidnapping and all this kind of stuff. And so really building a culture where you allow them to get into free play and you allow their nervous system to develop in three dimensions, right? And that's, to me, one of the biggest things is just neurologically, we have taken three dimensions out, right? You know, the walls are flat, the floor is flat, you know, your shoes are not, you know, contoured in a way like the earth would be. And even if you were, the pavement is flat. And so just spending as much time in 3D as possible so that they could develop into these fully evolved creatures with huge brains that, you know, got us to the top of the food chain. You know, we've just been in a regressive downward spiral since the Industrial Revolution. And so not my kids, you know, we're looking at a forest school now, like just, you know, have them be out in the woods all day. Like, to me, that's a lot better for adaptive behavior and neurology than sitting there learning his ABCs before it matters, right? And so you look at the studies on that, it's just like, just turn them into a whole human first. And the rest of that stuff comes easy.
Wow, that's awesome and great advice for anybody out there. Because I know as a parent, like you said, you know, becoming a monk was easy relative to becoming a parent, because now it's no longer about you. And you and I lived a very, you know, not parallel life, but very, very similar paths. I don't want to take any more of your time. I think that was absolutely amazing. Give me something that I can do right now to be the greatest version of myself going forward as a man, as a parent, and living a mindful, love-filled life.
When your kids ask it, I learned this the hard way, right? You think mindfulness is this thing you do on your damn cushion, right? That's just, you know, that's just the workshop. When your kids come to you for anything, right, in that moment, they're calling out to you and they want you in that moment. So the not now thing destroys that relationship. It destroys their connection with this guy called dad, right? So your challenge as a dad, you know, and I'm just kind of pulling this out of the ether for you here, is every time they come to you with something, just stop and understand that this is God calling you right now to be 100% present and loving and just be like, yes, what's up? And usually within like 10 to 30 seconds, maybe 2 minutes, like they've gotten their fill and they're off running around doing what the hell they're doing anyways. And you could go back to work or do whatever you were doing. But to give them that undivided attention and stop time and be the person that they need you to be for them allows you to also be the person you need to be for yourself.
Beautiful, man. And what's next for you? That was amazing. And, are you growing your business? Are you writing more books? Are you going back to experience monkhood again? What's next for you, man?
Yeah, so we're going to spend a month in Italy, just kind of, you know, eating gluten and drinking wine and wondering why it's better there, right? And just with the family, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, just some quality time with the family. I'm overdue, yeah. Right? Like I was making a movie and writing a book and all sorts of things last year. And then
When are you going?
Late March through late April.
Oh, man, I'm going to miss you. I think I'm going to spend June there.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, yeah. I think Garrett Gunderson's going there. So a few of my friends have like, you know, it's just this thing where it's like, what the hell? Like, I don't want to do that when I retire. As a matter of fact, I don't want to retire. So how do I live my life in a way where I'm constantly like, you know, I do most of my business on the phone or on a laptop anyways, who cares? Mm-hmm. Right. And so, but then I have a docuseries on the microbiome that I'm very excited about. There's a revolution happening in health all about the microbiome we're doing this year. Probably won't write another book. I just finished a book last year called The Art of Stopping Time. And it's really like, it's just starting to get out there and do well. And I'm going to kind of lay low, like grow, you know, just kind of get out of the way of everyone in my business. You know, I don't want it to be, you know, an egocentric model where it's like, I'm just giving people power and department heads and being like, hey, run with this, right? Like I don't need to be involved in the stuff that I'm not good at. And what I'm good at is like, I don't know, like being me. Right. And so like, I'll just keep doing content and chilling out and kind of having these conversations and let people who love the business and growing businesses and stuff, you know, excel at what they do. Right. And so we're building out a few films and a few other like TV concepts for the next couple of years. And my producer has 30 years experience as a TV producer. So why the hell would I get in his way? I'll just come in for creative control meetings once in a while and be like, hey, I think this might be a good idea, but let the pros do what they do. And you know, live your life.
Good for you, man. And I think you're doing awesome. I'd like to see the adventures you live with your kids as a movie. So think about that one for your next one. And Pedram, I appreciate you, man. The Urban Monk, How to Stop Time. Anywhere else people can find you? Well.org.
Yep, well.org or theurbanmonk.com. my neighborhoods, you know, and you know, social. I suck at social. Everyone's like, you should Instagram. I'm like, I don't want to stop the moment to capture the moment, to share the moment. I'd rather live the moment. You know, I don't care about that stuff, right? I just want to live life. And so, but, you know, I'll do lots of, like, you know, like live videos and stuff when I go into the office. So the urbanmonk.com or well.org.
Awesome, man. Can you teach everybody exactly how to breathe into the lower dantian in 10 seconds?
Yeah. Imagine you have a balloon down there about 3 fingers below your navel. Inflate it on the inhale. It's in the center of your body, so it should push out your lower abdomen. It should push back your spine. It should push out to the sides. And just feel that whole area inflate on the inhale and then deflate that balloon on the exhale and let the air travel up the center and out the nose. And if you just worked on the mechanics of that, you'll find your lower dantian and get way better at oxygenating your body and breathing healthier.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, Pedram. I appreciate you, man, and have an awesome day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what was your favorite part of the episode with Pedram? Personally, I thought the answers he gave were so far outside of the box that I absolutely loved them. So I want to hear what your favorite part of today's episode was. So leave me a review. Tell me what it is. And I'd love to, if you liked the episode, have you share it with somebody else, because this information for me was absolutely life-changing. I'm going to go back and listen to it again and again as often as I can until I set it into my unconscious mind. And you know that's the reality of life, right? If you guys want to change, you need to set it into your unconscious so it doesn't have to be thought about anymore. It becomes the person you are. So leave me a review, share, and have an awesome day. Live your greatness.